This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
The people of South Africa expect their leaders to work together to meet their needs. They expect the parties for which they have voted to find common ground, to overcome their differences.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on the challenges of forming a coalition government with parties that have very different priorities than the ANC, which has ruled alone for 30 years. Also, key enterprises are shut down in Nigeria as workers start a nationwide strike. And Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is on the first trip by Moscow's top diplomat to Guinea since 2013. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Hospitals, financial institutions, schools, the power grid, airports, and government offices, along with other key enterprises, are shut down as Nigeria workers commence a nationwide strike. Labor unions began the strike at midnight after the government rejected a call for a new minimum wage and to reverse the electricity tariff hike. Our reporter is monitoring developments of the strike in Abuja, Nigeria, and has this report.
The Nigeria Labour Congress, or NLC, and Trade Union Congress, the TUC, are demanding the monthly minimum wage be raised to 494,000 naira, which is about $370. The current minimum wage is 30,000 naira, about $23, and the government is offering to double it to $46. Union leaders say the government's offer won't even buy a 25-kilogram bag of rice, Nigerian staple food, which sells for about 35,000 naira. The Nigeria Labour Congress and affiliated unions in the 36 states have instructed their members to stay off work indefinitely. On Sunday, before the strike began, government officials, leaders in parliament and labor leaders went into a closed-door meeting which lasted for almost 4 hours. Nigeria Labor Congress President Joe Ajaero said they are resolute in their quest to improve the living wage of Nigeria workers.
We are quite committed to finding a way forward, finding a living wage, finding a survival wage and not starvation wage for Nigerians.
The Senate President, Godswill Akpabio, says the government is concerned about the consequences of the strike and pleaded with the unions to end it.
Whatever agreement we come to will be mutually beneficial to all, the government and the workers. So we are all concerned. We are wearing the same shoe and we'll be very glad to have something that is workable. But we must also be mindful of collateral damage.
The emergency meeting with government representatives and the labor leaders ended in deadlock, as the union said they would not call off the strike. Festus Osifo is president of the Trade Union Congress.
We have listened to them. We would take all their plea to our organs. For now, we don't have the powers to call off the industrial action, so the industrial action will continue while we would have a conversation with our respective organs as soon as possible.
Labor groups have been negotiating with the government over a new minimum wage since President Bola Tinubu's government set new policies last year that's raised the cost of goods and services. Tinubu's government ended government fuel subsidies and raised rates for electricity. However, Nigerian Information Minister Mohammed Idris recently told VOA that by ending the subsidies, the government has been able to spend more on education and social services and has been able to stabilize the naira exchange rate. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
In South Africa, talks to form a coalition government are underway following last week's election. The African National Congress, or the ANC, dropped to just 40% of the vote, ending the one-party rule that South Africans have known since apartheid ended some 3 decades ago. Darren Taylor reports.
The law says a government must be formed within 14 days. The weakened African National Congress has two choices. It could form a government of national unity with the centrist official opposition Democratic Alliance, the DA, which got 22% of the vote, or it could go into a coalition with a few radical populist parties led by former President Jacob Zuma's Umkhonto weSizwe, the MK. It received almost 15% of the vote. The MK and its likely partner, the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, want to change the constitution to make their policies possible. Their main plans are to seize land, including from white farmers, and to give the state control of all forms of wealth, including banks and mines, for what they call equal redistribution to the poor. In a speech on Sunday, DA leader John Steenhuisen said his party will do everything possible to avoid the MK and EFF governing.
I too am a father to three young daughters, and like millions of South Africans, I don't want them to grow up in a country run by a party like MK that wants to abolish the constitution, which wants to subvert the judiciary, and that plans to expropriate private property and nationalize the Reserve Bank. These are the things contained in the manifestos of the EFF and MK. And they amount to an all-out assault on the constitution of our country. They will cause untold unemployment, misery, hardship and hunger for millions of our people.
In a speech broadcast on Sunday night, ANC leader and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa repeatedly emphasized his party will form a government with people who respect the constitution and democracy.
The people of South Africa expect their leaders to work together to meet their needs. They expect the parties for which they have voted to find a common ground, to overcome their differences, to act and work together for the good of everyone, to work together within the framework of our constitution and address whatever challenges we encounter peacefully and in accordance with the prescripts of our constitution and the rule of law. That is what is required of us.
Some political analysts say Ramaphosa's speech was a rebuke of the MK and EFF. Both parties have suggested they've been cheated out of votes. The MK also says it won't work with the ANC unless Ramaphosa resigns. The ANC says this isn't going to happen. Ramaphosa ousted Zuma as ANC leader in late 2017, following allegations that Zuma and his government allowed billions of rands to be looted from state enterprise during his term as president. Zuma denies wrongdoing, branding Ramaphosa an agent of white capital. Some analysts say all this points to the ANC rejecting the MK and EFF as coalition partners. But the ANC also has fundamental differences with the DA. The DA wants to scrap key ANC policies, such as black economic empowerment, which it says have enriched a black elite and left millions poor and unemployed. The DA wants to privatize state enterprises and wants closer ties with Western powers. The ANC is against privatization and has close ties with China, Iran, and Russia, which backed it during the anti-apartheid fight. No parties have indicated when formal talks will begin, but VOA has been told unofficially that some preliminary contact has started. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan is urging the international community to support aid organizations and the informal community groups in Sudan who are saving lives. Ambassador Tom Perillo says emergency response rooms created by Sudanese volunteers at the start of the conflict lack the necessary support for averting the looming humanitarian disaster in the country. Perillo was speaking with John Tanza, host of VOA South Sudan in Focus program.
Unfortunately, in Sudan, for many decades, we've seen this same playbook where armed groups will use starvation as a weapon of war. They will use the shutting down of either borders or lines within the war, whether that's to subject people to horrific rents, threats, sexual slavery, other abuses. And this is an effort to really think more creatively using current technology about how we might do that differently. Now, it's true, it's hard to scale up the level of support needed to reach millions and millions of people. And so the international NGOs still have a very important role to play. We still need to see the military open up the borders to food and medicine and the RSF guarantee safe access. But even in the midst of that, we've seen these amazing, inspiring efforts really make a difference.
Let's talk about the Paris donor conference that was held, and there were lots of pledges. Did that really meet the expectations of the people of Sudan?
So there's good news and bad news. I mean, the good news is we substantially increased the pledges. The bad news is it started at such a pitifully low level that even those increases are needing to materialize more quickly. We are starting to see a difference in terms of food and medicine on the front lines of this conflict. We've been very clear that that needs to be actively forward deployed, whether that's into warehouses in Port Sudan or in Chad and other areas. Of course, we also have many refugees in parts of South Sudan and Kenya, Uganda, Egypt, where we've been able to get some increased support. So it is part of it, but that really needs to be the beginning, not the end of the conversation, of making sure those pledges become more food and medicine and that they can reach the hardest hit areas. And again, part of that is where these non-traditional innovations can be part of that solution.
Let's look at the traditional, you know, toolbox of diplomacy. U.S. has been on record for dangling carrots and sticks. And of late, there were lots of sanctions slapped on both sides in the conflict in Sudan. How will that impact the move to really reach out those who are trapped inside South Sudan? I mean, inside Sudan, rather.
Well, we think it has been helpful, but it is not sufficient. I think we do know that sanctions have probably deterred some of the more aggressive attacks on al-Fashir and some of the atrocities and hate speech that we see. But obviously, we are nowhere close to conditions in Sudan that we would consider acceptable. We're seeing the horrific attacks on particularly women and children. We've seen the ethnic cleansing of the Mas elite. We continue to see starvation and other horrific conditions. So we are far, far from where we need to be. We need more countries to join us in those sanctions. But really, at the end of the day, we have to remember this was a man-made crisis. This is not a famine that was caused by a drought. It's not a famine that was caused by a disease that hit crops or by a terrible storm. This was an entirely man-made famine because of the decision of the SAF and RSF to go to war, because of the decision of the RSF to burn crops and loot warehouses, and now of SAF to limit humanitarian access when people are starving. So we need much more to be done. The sanctions will be part of it, and we will continue to increase the costs on those actors inside and outside of Sudan who are fueling this conflict. But ultimately, we want is for people to come to the peace table. We believe that table is set in Jeddah. We are looking for the commitments, particularly from SAF, to allow that to go forward, to answer any outstanding questions that are there, because we believe this is the path forward to peace. And that is really what we hear most often from the Sudanese people, is a need to silence the guns and ensure access to food and medicine.
That was Ambassador Tom Perillo. He's the U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan. He was speaking with my colleague, John Tanza. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please go to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov arrived today in Guinea on the first trip by Moscow's top diplomat to the West African country since 2013. Russia has seen its relations with the West plummet after it sent troops to Ukraine in 2022 and has sought to boost its influence in Africa in recent years. The French news agency AFP says Russia's foreign ministry announced the visit on the Telegram social media app but did not provide details. Russia's state news agency TASS said Guinea would be part of a tour of African countries but did not give an agenda. But Russian news agency Afrins.ru said he was expected in Chad on Wednesday at the head of an important delegation. The same article also said a trip to Burkina Faso was possible. Former U.S. President Donald Trump weighed in on Sunday on the possibility of being sentenced to jail next month after his convictions for falsifying business records in New York. The guilty verdict is already being used by both the Trump and Biden campaigns to fire up their respective supporters ahead of the November election. But swaying undecided voters will be trickier, analysts say. Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
He may be the first U.S. president to be convicted on criminal charges, but Donald Trump's popularity isn't waning on the campaign trail, according to one of his lawyers. Will Scharf was interviewed Sunday on ABC's This Week show.
The Trump campaign obviously smashed political fundraising records, including raising money from tens of thousands of new donors in the 24 hours after this verdict. I think the American people see this judgment for what it was, and we're certainly hopeful that on appeal we can get it thrown out.
During the trial, prosecutors argued Trump falsified business records to illegally influence the outcome of the 2016 election that he won. The guilty verdict won't help Trump politically, especially with African-American voters, says Maryland Governor Wes Moore, a Democrat. He appeared on ABC.
What's going to resonate with the community as a whole is having a president like we have in President Biden, who's actually focusing on our futures.
In an exclusive interview that aired Sunday on Fox and Friends, Trump weighed in on the possibility of being sentenced to jail or house arrest on July 11th.
I don't know that the public would stand it, you know. I'm not sure the public would stand for it. I think it would be tough for the public to take. You know, at a certain point, there's a breaking point.
The Biden campaign posted a clip of the interview on X with the caption reading, quote, "Convicted felon Trump suggests there will be violence if he is put under house arrest." While U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to stick to his messaging that no one is above the law, his campaign could increasingly use Trump's guilty verdict to attack the presumptive Republican presidential nominee's character, says political scientist at the University of Chicago, Susan Stokes. She was interviewed via Skype.
His desire to use his money and power and influence to avoid being held to account, you can expect that kind of focus from them.
Beyond catering to his base, the Trump campaign would do well to tweak their strategy to win other voters, Stokes added.
Maybe suburban women who might be a little bit on the fence about what to do in the 2024 in November, and need to be given some reason to look past this verdict.
Both presidential candidates are expected to continue courting undecided voters this month, in the lead-up to the first presidential debate set for June 27th. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations Weather Agency says the return of the cooling La Niña weather phenomenon should help lower temperatures somewhat after months of global heat records. The World Meteorological Organization says the impact is likely to be felt in the next few months because the warming El Niño weather pattern, which has helped fuel a spike in global temperatures and extreme weather around the world since mid-2023, is now showing signs of ending. The WMO warned, however, that global temperatures would continue to rise in the long term due to human-induced climate change, which continues to make extreme weather worse and upend seasonal rainfall and temperature patterns. According to the French news agency AFP, the WMO said there was a 60% chance of La Niña conditions in the period from July to September and a 70% likelihood during August through November. Well, you know what that means. It's time for a look at sports, and I have our VOA sports analyst, Mukbil Yabarov, here in the studio today. Thanks for being on the show, Mukbil.
Thanks for having me.
So the Basketball Africa League wrapped up over the weekend. What were your thoughts on the finals?
Yeah, I think the finals were definitely very exciting. This is the fourth season of the Basketball Africa League. It has been tremendous just to see the growth of the league season in and season out. Funny thing is that this is the first time a sub-Saharan team has won the tournament. In the past three seasons, it has been a North African team that has won. Interestingly enough, a debutant team from Libya actually was in the finals, but unfortunately they were not able to win. So the Angolan side, Petro de Luanda, were able to win 107-94. This team has been a part of the tournament since the inception. So it was finally about time that they were able to lift up some silverware. So shout out to Angola.
Lots of shouts of cheers going on there.
Absolutely. Luanda is going crazy.
So staying on the finals talk, the NBA finals start on Thursday with the Boston Celtics going up against the Dallas Mavericks. Which team looks like they could win it all to you?
Oh, interestingly enough, the Boston Celtics to me seem like they've had a little bit of an easier route to the finals. They were able to beat the Miami Heat 4-1. They were also able to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, 4-1 as well. Mm-hmm. And then they played the Pacers, and they were able to sweep them 4-0. So they've only lost twice in the last 12 games. The Mavs have had a little bit of a different story, but nonetheless, sometimes when the pathway is a little bit more challenging, maybe you are kind of ready for, anything mm-hmm. thrown at you. So I think the Mavericks are an unlikely team to come out of the West. They actually had a pathway where they had to beat the Clippers, who were ranked higher than them. They beat them 4-2. Then they played the Oklahoma City Thunder, who were the number one ranked team in the West, and they beat them 4-2. And then they played the Timberwolves, which they were able to beat 4-1. So they've been able to get it done against some very formidable opponents on the West.
And you never know what a big shot of adrenaline could do for those last game.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm sure both teams are going to come out firing and super excited. There's a nice little storyline because Kyrie Irving used to play with the Boston Celtics. So it's like Kyrie versus the Celtics. Nice little storyline. He hasn't also been to the finals in about 7 years. So it's kind of like his redemption arc in essence. So yeah, a lot of fun storylines. And then the Boston Celtics with their young core, finally, maybe they're able to get their first one.
Cool. So lastly, the UEFA Champions League final happened over the weekend. Would you say the results came out as expected?
I would say that majority of folks maybe outside of the Dortmund Borussia fan base were expecting Real Madrid to get this win. Real, this is their 15th time winning the Champions League. So it's not like, you know, this is just a team that's just getting here for the first time.
No debutants.
Absolutely not. They have a historical dominance of this league, in essence. They've been dubbed the champions of the Champions League. So it was a tall task to ask for Dortmund to come out here. And they played really well. They had a lot of really good pockets where they could have capitalized. Unfortunately, they weren't able to do so. And then Real is one of those teams, if you let them linger along, then they're going to find an open pocket. And they found an open pocket, and they were able to score two goals. First goal was by Danny Carvajal, this was his second goal, I believe, that he scored in all Champions League. And then Vinicius Jr. scoring at the 83rd minute. Potential Ballon d'Or candidate.
Too bad we don't have the Queen's We Are the Champions queued up to go. We are the champions. Yeah. Okay, thanks for joining us, Mukbil.
Thanks for having me.
And that just about wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Tian Wang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.